Hey, everybody. Listen, about two-thirds of the way through the program, you're going to hear an email come in, and you're going to hear my response to it. And I need to let you know right away that it turns out that that thing was a practical joke that I didn't get. So please don't worry. Please don't freak. Everything's okay. But I just didn't want you hearing that and then thinking that something, you know, really icky was transpiring. It's not. Everything is okay. No fair running out and fast-forwarding to hour three because you won't get it. Enjoy the show.
Go! Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
I need a keeper. Well, howdy! Bit of a rocky start to the beginning of the show this evening. By rocky start, I mean, you know, 7 minutes late because your humble host is a moron. Last week I was a rube. Now I'm a moron. You know, it's a whole lot easier to stream an internet radio program when you've actually got the internet hooked up to the machine that's doing the streaming. Jiminy. Nah, see, what happened is, over the weekend, I was working on a computer. Well, the first Beast Machine has come back to life after building the second Beast Machine. But it had been idle for so long that it had to pick up a bunch of updates, so I pulled the cord out of the streaming computer because we have, you know, limited cord access here in this tiny little matchbox of a studio that has, you know, tons of fabulous equipment in it, but it's still a tiny little matchbox of a studio. So I had had it plugged into the other machine, getting updates on it yesterday, and I looked at it about 9 dozen times, and I thought, you know what? I should go ahead and pull that internet cord and put it back in the streaming computer, because otherwise I'm going to make a fool out of myself. But there was always something pressing. There was always a piece of email to be answered. There was always a phone call to pick up or to be made. And so I got to put that cord back. I should really put that cord back. You know, that cord needs to be put back. And now I have put that cord back. And the internet's work again. And the stream is going out, and everything is hunky-dory and happy. And I feel like, whoo, a real live one. Oh, Margaret. So this is the Monday edition of Head On. And it kind of reminds me of what we could do if we had a staff and I had a keeper and a handler or something. And I'd advise you to plug the internet cord back into the computer whenever you feel like it before the show. I had to bother Ben Birch. Ben said, oh, then you're not connected to the internet at all. And I went, bye, Ben. I'm an idiot. Click. Because I wasn't connected to the internet at all. I miss my producer. But maybe she'll come back and play with us this summer. Anyhow, boy. I know how I want to start this thing. What a weekend. I signed off Friday and just sort of thought, well, Nice little weekend. Relax. I had mentioned on the air that I was going up Saturday morning, the whole fam-damily, to the second blessing of the mountains. Or maybe it was the third. I might have missed the first one, but I was there for the one in November. B.J. Goodmanson was there videoing, and I got some footage as well. I took the video camera and the still camera, shot some pictures, yada, yada, yada. So I got up Saturday morning hoping that we would have a sunny morning and that, you know, we'd see the young, lush, green life returning to this soon-to-be-destroyed mountain. Just as a sort of a farewell, you know, to see life coming back on the mountain. But I got up Saturday morning, and it was, in a word, icky. I mean, it was just gray and wet and sort of unpleasantly cool and damp. And Agnes decided to sleep in, and she needed it because, you know, she's raising four kids, a son-in-law, and two grandchildren. So I gathered together our three, Margie and Ferg and Doodle. We jumped in the family truckster and went on up the mountain for the mountain blessing. And I thought, you know, oh, it's gray and it's cold and it's miserable. The last time I shot video, it was gray and it was cold and it was miserable. And what's the point? I'm leaving the camera here. I don't feel like schlepping it. Stupid. So we get up there. And you'd have to see it. Maybe I'll video it at some point and get it over to ELO or one of the bloggers one of the news ninjas, Gene or Susan, and get some video up so you can see what it looks like to drive up there. Basically, you go up the road and eventually you come up to where the road turns. There's a left turn up a dirt road, dirt and rock, and that's what goes up the side of the mountain to what is referred to as Fire Tower Mountain. It's all Gauley Mountain. And it's perfectly passable road. It hadn't changed any from November to now. But you see, the coal company had gotten wind of the fact that we were going to go up and, you know, do some praying on top of the mountain. And that didn't sit any too well with the coal company. So rather than have a bunch of mostly 50 and 60-something activists and a couple of priests up there being seditious and praying all over their mountaintop removal job and their clear-cutting and their valley-filling and, you know, generally the death and destruction and damnation that they're wreaking upon that hill. They had hastily erected a metal cable gate, just strung a piece of metal cable across the road and spray-painted a no-trespassing sign, even though arguably, the road is public. But coal companies can do what they want to in West Virginia. They can kill us, they can rob us, they can rape the mountains, they can rip us off, they can do anything they want. They can destroy entire communities, entire regions of the state. And it's okay. It's all okay. But the folks who had shown up on that cold, gray, wet April morning, the day after the 40th anniversary of the murder of Dr. King, I mention that because these people are as committed to nonviolence as the rest of the anti-mountaintop removal movement is. So, okay, that's fine. You know, we'll hold our service right here. And it was, you know, it was up on the mountainside. It wasn't down in the middle of the town. There was, you know, nobody, there were no hippies. All we are saying is give the mountain a chance. No, none of that. It was intensely private. It was, in fact, a religious ceremony. And so the folks who were leading the ceremony, a couple of Episcopal priests, set up a music stand, you know, just a little band room music stand where the notebook could lie, and people were passed out the paths in it for the leader and the people. I've got one laying around here somewhere. Share it with you as quick as I lay hands on it. No, not lay hands on it that way. I'm not going to heal it. Ah, there it is. Yeah, this was real subversive stuff. But anyway, so they started setting up, and all of a sudden, we heard this ungodly racket. And a couple of four-wheelers came zooming around the curve and howling up the road where we were standing. And a couple of characters in baby blue T-shirts got off, matching baby blue T-shirts. And no sooner had the four-wheelers come up than a whole parade of pickup trucks and such like came on around the further curve of the hill. And everybody who got out of that vehicle, those vehicles, had on a matching baby blue T-shirt. It was the company people. The company, the coal company, had told those pitiful people that work for it. I mean, come on, let's face facts. They're slaves. Had told those people that they had to be there Saturday morning because there was going to be a bunch of praying Christians up there praying for their jobs to end. Oh, God, can you imagine? And so under threat of their jobs, they put on what they were told to wear. And just like slaves always do when the master calls the tune, they crawled out of bed on Saturday morning, and they got their Friends of Coal T-shirts, and their Friends of Coal stickers, and their Friends of Coal signs to come up and intimidate them environmentalists who want our jobs. They came bellowing up the dirt road there. We'd pulled a little ways up and parked. And they came bellowing up the road too, because they were going to block the road. Keep the environmentalists off the dirt road. Well, that really was their plan. Because if they could have forced us into the public road, then they could have had law enforcement come and break up the service. But they didn't succeed at that. I was standing talking to a few people when they came barreling up the dirt road, kind of just standing there in the road chatting. Kids were standing with me. And the coal slaves came barreling up the road, and like the reasonably sane people that they are, the other folks that were there for the service got the hell out of the way. And I was about to do the same thing. But I thought, wait a minute. Why the hell do I have to move? They say this isn't a public road. Well, it's not a road. I'll stand my ground. And so I stood there. and this one shiny new pickup truck from one of the coal slaves that one of the coal slaves owned pulled up, and his pretty little made-up wife sitting in the passenger seat flipped me the bird. Yeah, classy bunch, those coal slaves. And they got out and they assembled. And they gathered together at the foot of the road with us environmentalists penned in on the upper side of the road. You know, almost like we were penned for slaughter or something. And I got to tell you, I was right nervous because, you know, those coal people, the company people, they're prone to violence. Because, see, all they get is a steady dose of indoctrination and propaganda and brainwashing, saying that people who don't want their communities destroyed are trying to take your jobs. That's how it is that they can be compelled to show up on a cold, gray, wet April morning, all in matching slave garb, to intimidate a bunch of peaceniks. Because, I mean, that's what we were. There were no pitchforks. There were no torches. The most potent thing we had was a couple of Episcopal priests, for heaven's sakes. And the most dangerous thing they had was a profoundly disorganized plastic notebook. So we were pinned in. And the priests began the service, and it was nice. You know, I don't know where I get this reputation of being hostile to religion. I'm not. The only thing I'm hostile to is having somebody else's religion shoved down my throat. But this was a beautiful thing. We started the whole affair by singing Morning Has Broken. Yeah, boy, there's some radicalism. And when the song was ended, the priest said, "In the name of God who creates mountains, in the name of Christ crucified on a mountain, and in the name of the Spirit deep in the mountains, Amen." And the people said, "Holy, holy, holy, earth is filled with God's presence." Priest said, "Christ, as we come into this sanctuary today, we enter the holy mountain of God." And the people said, "Holy, holy, holy, this mountain is filled with your presence." And those poor company people began shuffling around because, you know, they think they're followers of Jesus too. I guess they think that when Jesus was tempted by Satan on the mountain, if he just would have blown the mountain up, it could have ended the problem. And the priest said, "We invite the mountains to worship with us." And at this, the company people started cackling like hens laying eggs. You know, that uncomfortable sort of forced laughter. And the people said, "Deep forests, babbling brooks, and clear mountain streams." And the priest said, "We invite the wildlife to join us." And the people said, "Bear, deer, squirrels, chipmunks, and birds of all kinds." And the priest said, "We join with the mountain creatures in praising God." And we said, "Leaping trout and crawling creatures, beautiful flowers and honeybees." And the priest said, "We call the depths of the mountains to celebrate." And the people said, "Coal, minerals, and things from the earth." And all through this, the company people had been hollering,
Cole keeps the lights on. And hollering, yeah, well, turn off your lights then.
I mean, we're talking about real morons here, okay? I mean, not very smart at all. Quit school when they were 16 because, you know, you can get a nice job blowing up mountains and running a D9 Caterpillar. Or a dragline. And you don't have to do much of that, you know, thinking stuff. Get the girlfriend pregnant for the first time when she's, you know, 17, 18 years old. Look, it's a story that's repeated all over West Virginia. The priest said, "We come to the mountain of God today." And the people said, "And we worship in God's presence, a sacred place on our planet." And the company people hooted some more. And the priest said, "We remember the mountains where God chose to reveal a special presence, Mount Sinai and Mount Zion, a presence that also fills our planet." And the people said, "We remember our excitement as a child climbing a peak and viewing creation, wonders that extended almost forever and fascinating creatures around us, the mysteries of God's wild world." And the company people hooted some more and laughed and guffawed and waved their friends of coal placards. The priest said, "We remember and rejoice." And the people said, "Thank you, God, for mountains to remember, wild worlds to make us wonder." And the company people said, "Coal keeps your lights on!" And some coal wife hollered, some company wife hollered, "Who's gonna put my cheerings through at college?" And the priest said, "We remember and confess that we have become alienated from earth, and we have viewed mountains as little more than tourist spots, hills as places for mining, or wild beasts as creatures to be tamed." And the people said, "We are sorry. We have polluted rivers with waste from mountain mines. We have turned the wonders of the wild into a commodity. We have killed creatures in the wild with chemicals. We are sorry. We are sorry." And the coal wives hollered, "Quit telling your lies!" And the priest said, "Christ hears your confession from Mount Calvary and forgives your sins against the wild." And the people said, "Christ, teach us to love the earth as our home and mountains as gifts for wonder." And the coal wives hollered, "Who's gonna feed my family?" And the priest said, "Let us pray together." And the people said, "God, our Creator, as we stand on this mountain today, we celebrate the wonders of the wild that surround us. Help us to see in the surrounding landscape the mountains that have been destroyed in our state and where it has been polluted. Teach us to recognize that the hills are alive with your spirit and to rejoice with all our kin, especially the creatures of the wild, in the name of Christ who reconciles and renews all things in creation. Amen." And the company wife hollered, "Why don't y'all all just turn off your lights?" We had readings from Isaiah and from Psalms, from St. Paul's Epistle to the Romans. Then Father Stan led us in a lovely song that's sort of become this little group's theme called "You Raise Me Up." more of that dangerous singing, don't you know? And then we had a reading from the Gospel of Mark. And then Father Stan began his homily. And then it got real tense. Because that's when he began talking about what mountaintop removal does to communities, whether they be communities in West Virginia or Virginia or Kentucky, or now, as I find out, because a bill has failed in the Tennessee legislature, the hills of East Tennessee. Yes, the company wants to go in as close as they can get to the Smoky Mountain National Park, just like they want. They've come in and have this particular permit here near where I live has as its boundary the New River Gorge National River. They can blow up the mountain all the way to the edge of the national park if they so choose. Father Stan was talking about what it does to communities in all of those places and the poisons it unleashes into the communities and the destruction that it wreaks. And the company man hollered, "You're a liar!" And the company wives hollered, "Quit telling your lies! Quit lying on us! Who's going to feed our family and put our children through college?" One of the company wives was in the bed of that pickup truck that would prefer to have run over me. And she was directly across from Father Stan, and she looked down at him and screamed, calling him a liar. And then, in the midst of it all, it got even better. Because that's when this little roly-poly, puzzle-gutted fella, I reckon one of the ones who had been on the four-wheelers, started hollering and coming down from the bogus makeshift gate, screaming directly at Father Stan and trying to shout him down, which I will tell you, he did. You would have thought Father Stan was some sort of shaman from a alien land, as this little fella in his mandatory baby blue T-shirt. By the way, what the T-shirts were, on the back they had some sort of a design, and around it it said, "Protect a endangered species. Save a minor." And he came howling down at the priest and said, "I worship the same God you do, but I ain't a-gonna let you sit here and tell lies on us like this. Who's a-gonna feed my family? Who's a-gonna put my children through college? Why don't you turn off your lights? Don't you know coal keeps the lights on?" I came away from the event quite convinced that actually the company people knew their catechism a hell of a lot better than we knew ours. And he persisted. And a few people went over and said, Sir, do you realize you're disrupting a church service? Do you realize that you're interrupting a worship service? I don't care! And Father Stan didn't try to go any further with his homily. And just when it was getting right tense, a lady in our group, don't know her name, with a beautiful, clear, bell-like ringing voice, began singing, "Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound." And the whole group picked it up, and chills ran up my spine. And finally, once they realized that they had shut down all this talk, all this truth about what they're doing to their neighbors and the community where they live, once they had silenced dissent, the company people shut up. But only, and I emphasize only, once they were sure that we wouldn't be doing no more praying to God for the salvation of that mountain that they're doing everything in their power every living blessed day to send straight to hell. And that, folks, that's what we're up against. And I, as far as I'm concerned, the fiends of coal tipped their hands Saturday up on Rich Creek Road, up on the way to Fire Tower Mountain. They tipped their hands all right, because they showed what they'll do. They showed the lengths to which they will go to make sure that people who want to save mountains do not get their message out. But you know what? And I'm not trying to be boastful or overly prideful. They didn't know we had a secret there. They didn't know that the horn was there. They didn't know that by Monday evening, thousands and thousands and thousands of people all over the world would know what asses they had made of themselves and what an embarrassment they had been to their company. They thought they had silenced a group of, you know, not terribly threatening people. But that's not surprising. Subtlety is not the company people's strong suit. If you want further proof of that, go to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com website, where you can see the ABC News video of Massey Energy's Don Blankenship committing a clear criminal offense against an ABC News videographer. Go and look. You can see Don Blankenship actually attack the young man. "Don't hit me, man. Don't hit me, man. Please don't hit me, man." That's all you hear. You know, nothing boisterous, nothing threatening from the ABC News guy. First thing Don Blankenship says is, "You're taking pictures of me, boy. You're liable to get shot." Really? No taking pictures of His Holiness Don Blankenship? The Carbon Don, as it were? Yeah, go have a look. It's right there. It's easy to find. This is the kind of thinking behind having T-shirts printed up and sending your little company slaves up to assault. Because you see, an assault within the technical meaning of the term, what an assault is, an assault is putting someone in fear of being subjected to an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature. I, for instance, was assaulted by that guy and his vulgar wife in their pickup truck on Saturday. Not that I'm going to run out and press charges. Wouldn't be worth the hassle. But that's how they operate. It truly, truly is. And they were there. I mean, there was no public audience. That's the amazing thing. There was no audience at all. Just a little band of people who wanted to worship on God's creation at a place that will be erased from God's creation in a very, very short while. And these company slaves live in such unrelenting terror and fear. That they could not let it happen. The company could not let it be completed. And they sent the company people to shout it down, lest somehow or another the message get out, and these poor, poor, pathetic, ignorant people learn the truth of what they're doing. What gives these mountaintop removers the right to demand $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year in exchange for attacking me and my community? Where do they get that right? If they tried to do this in New York State or Pennsylvania or Connecticut or Massachusetts, if they tried to do it in Michigan, if they tried to do it in California or Oregon or Washington, they would be jailed, these mountaintop removers. They would be imprisoned as the criminals that they are. But not not in West Virginia, where mountaineers are always free.
In southern West Virginia, the place where I was born, there's something evil happening. There's something evil going on. They're tearing up our mountains. They're taking away our hills. They're taking all our homeland and making valley fields. destruction. Oh, when will they ever leave? Just go back to where they came from. Let us live in our mountains and be free. We're the keepers of the mountains, as Larry Gibson has said. Love 'em, leave 'em, but I warn you, don't destroy them or leave them for dead. 'Cause we'll hunt you down like outlaws. We'll expose you for what you are. Greedy, thieving murderers who buy and sell our lawmaking liars. Now the moral of my story, you just listen to what I say. We'll protect our homes, our mountains. You do the same, or you better stay away.
If you'd like to have a look at more or less what this was all very much like, you can go to Joe Bagent, JoeBagent.com, JoeBagent.com. I told Joe this story yesterday afternoon, and he said, "Bob, would you just write it down, please, and send it to me? Let me put it up on the website." So if you go to JoeBagent.com, you can find this essay. It's called "The Fight for Gauley Mountain," and at the bottom, there's a little photograph where you can get a sense of what it was like. JoeBagent.com. Joe was kind enough to say that, yeah, he wanted folks to see this story widely, and I was honored that he would ask me to put together something he could use on the website.
To be a real nice neighborhood, to the company moving down the block. They took away everything that was good, left us nothing here but rocks. This is where I played as a kid, and I think of my feet in the stream. While the trees swayed overhead in the breeze, now it's all a sad memory. Why does my heart cry out loud when I see these trees and hills gone without a word or a sigh, without a that it would come to this. Kiss the hills goodbye. Mm-hmm. hills, goodbye, oh no. Kiss the hills, goodbye. I never thought that it would come to this. Kiss the hills, goodbye. Kiss the hills, goodbye.
I would be profoundly remiss if I didn't tell you the name of the organization that had the courage to schedule and put together this event. It's called the Anstead Historic Preservation Council. And in the face of what you've seen described, or what you may see described, what you've heard described, or what you may see described over at on the essay at JoeBajant.com, these people have real courage. It reminds me of the courage that my friends at Coal River Mountain Watch display every single day. Because you know what? The company people are playing for keeps. Probably the bravest of the brave out of this group, our Father Roy Jean Crist and Father Stan Holmes. It takes guts to be surrounded and to keep trying to speak truth and do right, when the easiest thing in the world would be say, well, you know, obviously they don't want us up here, and I don't want to run into any trouble. Let's just go home. Every now and then, it's no secret the disdain that I maintain for a lot of the religion industry. But I'm able, in my own mind, to draw a line between the likes of the Benny Hinns and the Joyce Meyers and the Creflo Dollars and the Kenneth Copelands, and all of that crowd, and real men and women dedicated to the service of what they perceive to be their God. And these two men, Father Stan and Father Roy, stood in the finest tradition of Christian objection to sin and evil, and I was proud to stand and listen to them on Saturday morning. You'd have to see it, and maybe there's video, and you can, but you'd have to see this fella come barreling down, screaming his fool head off at Father Roy. Took some guts, because for a while there, I wasn't sure, but what one of those company wives was going to pick up a rock and put it upside Father Stan's head the way she was going on. And then we truly would have been like sheep led to the slaughter, because every single person there to bless that mountain was committed to the principles of nonviolence. The same cannot be said of the company people. I fully expected some tires to be slashed, but too many people were watching the company people for them to be able to get away with that kind of conduct. This is literally a struggle for the heart and soul of Appalachia. And I got to tell you, Agnes was a little bit peeved with me. She said, that's the last time the children go with you to one of those. And I said, honey, I hope next time you'll be with us. Because we need all the help we can get. The Anstead Historic Preservation Council is a small group that they are a committed group. And they will grow as more and more people find out what mountaintop removal is going to mean to Anstead, West Virginia, as they learn the facts. They will grow, and the protest will grow, and the objections will grow, and the outcry will grow. And here's the best part. We will win this thing. We will win this thing. We'll win it in Anstead. We'll win it in the southern coal fields. We'll win it in Boone County. We'll win it in Mingo County. We'll win it in Wyoming County. We'll win it in Raleigh County. We'll win it in Kanawha County. We'll win it in Fayette County. We will win it in Virginia. We will win it in Kentucky. We will win it in East Tennessee. We will win this. And we will be able to say that when the chips were down, we did what we could to make it possible for there to be a future in these ancient, ancient, ancient hills. So now you know why I'm so proud to be associated with folks like this. You get a little idea of the courage that is on display every single day, standing up to people who are so far gone they don't understand we're struggling for their own children's future as much as we are that of our own. That's why it makes me so proud for these programs to be sponsored in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's what makes me so proud to know people like Father Stan and Father Roy and all the other folks who were there too. Vivian Stockman was there from Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition. Denise Jardina was there. There were several people who had traveled a considerable distance to be with us. And I am proud. I am proud beyond proud to know them. A lot of other stuff going on in the world. We'll come back and have a run at some of them in the next hour. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Today you blasted near my street, and my house cracked at my feet. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Politicians by your side, they look so satisfied. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Promises you made amount to stealing. As a giant rock lands on my Chevrolet, suddenly I got that lawsuit feeling. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Hard to know that the sheriff's lips will kiss you. Now, where they kiss you, I can't say. We're asking for a big injunction issue. We can't help it if our homes are in your way. No, we can't help it if our homes are in your way.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right. Hour number two begins. This issue can never be very far from my heart and my soul, because this issue encompasses my children and my grandchildren and their future. But I will try to move on to some other issues. There's some stuff I want to share with you slightly related, well, intimately related with this topic here in just a couple of minutes. But we'll run to the phones. Hi, who have I got? Yeah, well, at any rate, that's our little stalker caller. Anyway, I just got news of a resolution passed by the West Virginia Young Democrats at their convention this weekend. And this is pretty stirring. Are there any West Virginia Young Republicans? What, do they meet in a phone booth? But anyway, at their convention this weekend, and this is not the direct quote, this is not a perfect quote of what was going on or of what was passed, but it's pretty doggone close. Healthy jobs, healthy communities, healthy mountains resolution from the West Virginia Young Democrats convention over the weekend held in Charleston. Whereas mountaintop removal harms West Virginia's current and future economic potential. Whereas surface mining has been a primary factor in the number of mining jobs falling from 125,000 in the 1950s to under 18,000 today due to the loss of deep mining jobs. Whereas deep mining offers many more jobs than mountaintop removal. Whereas the West Virginia Young Democrats recognize the importance of coal mining to the state and also the UMWA's concern about mountaintop removal. Whereas more than 1,200 miles of streams have been significantly impacted, with more than 750 miles of those streams permanently buried under valley fills in Appalachia as of 2003. Oh, by the way, that was one of the things that Father Stan mentioned that got the company wives hooting and hollering when he mentioned the number of streams that had been buried forever and killed, and the valleys that had been filled up, and started talking about the square acres and the square miles of things that had been destroyed. That's when they started hollering and hooting, "You're a liar! Who's going to send my children to college?" Whereas mountaintop removal significantly increases the danger and incidence of both flooding and landslides, damages local property values, and significantly harms both water quality and quantity. Whereas mountaintop removal is the destruction of the most biodiverse temperate forest in the world. Whereas more than 300,000 acres of hardwood forest has been destroyed by mountaintop removal. Whereas more than 56% of West Virginians are opposed to mountaintop removal, while just 29% support it. It's more like 80-20, truth be told. 80 against 24. Whereas legislators need to encourage good-paying green jobs and sustainable industries, whereas West Virginians deserve good-paying jobs that do not harm our water quality and health, be it resolved by the West Virginia Young Democrats that the West Virginia Young Democrats support enforcement of set regulations around safety and environmental laws with respect to mountaintop removal, and if necessary, implement new legislation around concerns that the West Virginia Young Democrats oppose a high concentration of mountaintop removal sites in a geographic area, that the West Virginia Young Democrats support a moratorium on new permits until further study can be done on the effects of mountaintop removal, while active sites which comply with current regulations remain active, while that the West Virginia Young Democrats support further investigation into the long-term ramification of continued coal mining on the health of communities surrounding mining, that the severance tax should be increased with a portion of the increase going toward creating jobs in renewable energies. And the text got updated on that. That the West Virginia Young Democrats support alternative methods of mining coal, that all Democratic legislators on all levels of government publicly, vigorously, and quickly act to protect safety standards in deep mines and bring good-paying green jobs through reclamation, renewable energy, sustainable industries, and other areas of the economy to all areas of West Virginia. Good on them. Way to go. Darn fine, I think. Now, it's going to be interesting to see, because, you know, the West Virginia Young Democrats are sort of an incubation unit for people who have a hope of serving their communities and their state when they get older. It'll be interesting to see, and I'm not trying to be a pessimist here, I'm really not. It'll be interesting to see this next generation come up and how it's how they handle the filth and the greed and the graft and the corruption that big coal lives and breathes and lives and dies by. It will be interesting indeed, but they are off to a fine, fine start. 7 minutes past the hour. You want to get involved in the conversation, you know that you're more than welcome to do so. The phone number you know already by heart, unless you're a brand new listener, in which case, hey, welcome to the program. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on, H-E-A-D-O-N, if you like to spell on your computer keypad or your telephone keypad. Go right ahead and dial in. We'll be happy to pay the freight. If however, you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan, either on your cell or your landline even, you know, those things are becoming quite prevalent, that unlimited long-distance dialing program, because phone companies have figured out that the consumers have figured out that it costs the phone company no more to transmit a call across the street than it does to transmit one around the world, and hence the plans. But at any rate, if you've got one of those, you can save us a nickel or a buck by dialing 304-658-3333. Email rolls into one of two places, your choice, bob@headonradio.com or bobkincaid@gmail.com. Either one gets here with pretty nearly equal alacrity. So, you know, we make it as possible as we can for you to enjoy the whole multimedia process. The chat room is there for you. headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, headonradionetwork.com. Just click on chat room. Registration's easy and free. We're entering the second week of the brand new message boards, the fora, if you will. headonradionetwork.com, click on forum. Those are free too. And it's more of a long-term, long-form way of expressing yourself. Give John Fox and the moderators and the news ninjas and the bloggers and so forth long enough. We'll have a smoke signal plan up too. It's just that amazing. And I do want to say something really quickly. I'm inspired and I am heartened because before, and I think this is the first time it's ever happened, before the month is a fourth over, we are past a fourth of the way in our fundraising goal. Our monthly fundraising goal. And that just is astonishing and encouraging to me. If we can continue at this pace, I can shut up about fundraising somewhere around, probably the 23rd or 24th of April. And won't that be nice? Because I hate doing this. But I want to thank those of you who have jumped into the fray, as it were, to make that happen. We are just over $600 as of today, the 7th of April. If we did that all month long, we'd actually take a little bit of a bite out of the deficit in which we operate here on the network. Because, see, we don't have some coal company out there buying us spiffy T-shirts and making us wear them. Nope. All we have is you. And frankly, as far as I'm concerned, that is heartwarmingly enough. A couple of things along the way to just, point out. Little pictures of the reality of life in Bushmerica here in the first week of April 2008. The Associated Press reports it's no longer a question of recession or not. Now it's how deep and how long. The American economy lost 80,000 jobs in March. Most of those 80,000 weren't able to go up and scream at a bunch of 50 and 60-something environmental activists and think, how am I going to put my children through college? Who's going to feed my family? No, they just had to take it and like it. Because a lot of those 80,000 jobs weren't involved in destroying communities. That's the highest job loss in 80,000, that is, the highest job loss in 5 years. In other words, there have been higher job loss months, also, of course, inside the George W. Bush Memorial Economic Miracle. The national unemployment rate has climbed up to 5.1%. In 3 months, 2008 starting out a little bit on the rough side of things. In 3 months, the United States has hemorrhaged 250,000 jobs. But see, I don't even like the way these news stories are written. Those aren't jobs. Those are lives. Those are families. Total U.S. employment rolls shrank for the third month in a row. And by the way, sometime next month, to very little fanfare, the United States Department of Labor will put out the real numbers. You know, this is how it always works. And instead of 80,000 jobs lost, it'll turn out to be it was 120,000 jobs lost. And instead of 250,000 jobs lost since the beginning of 2008, it'll turn out that it was really closer to 500,000. Because that's how the Bush administration operates. But, you know, what? Like I'm telling you anything you don't know. It is officially, folks, a recession. The real question, however, becomes one of whether we go from recession to depression. Stuart Hoffman is chief economist at PNC Financial Services Group. He says, it is now very clear that the fat lady has sung for the economic expansion. The country has slipped into a recession. Ben Bernanke isn't exactly the bluebird of happiness on this either. Where did the losses come from? The losses came from factories, construction companies, retailers, banks, real estate firms. Even the temp agencies are taking it on the chin. On the other hand, hospitals and healthcare sites had employment increases. Daycare providers had employment increases. Bars and restaurants had had employment increases. Insurance companies, zoos and parks and museums. And, of course, the Bush administration itself. Isn't that interesting? Hospitals and other healthcare sites gained jobs. That's because America keeps getting sicker and sicker and sicker. Child daycare centers gained jobs. That's because working three jobs in America, according to George Bush, is uniquely American. And mommy and daddy have to have somewhere to take the precious pumpkins while they're slaving away between job two and job three and job one. Bars and restaurants had employment go up. Well, you know what? When you lose your job at the widget factory where you were a member of a union and you had a pension and you had health care, and the factory goes bankrupt and your pension and your health care get listed as a company liability and just gets erased, you got to do something, America. So you go get you a job waiting tables. Because the widgets are being made in China now. You know, it's simple. It's a simple balancing scale. If you take away from one side, you can put it on the other. People who were skilled factory workers are now unskilled table waiters. But they'll be skilled soon enough because, you know, that's tip-based employment. And all they can do is pray that they're not serving Republican because those sons of bitches don't tip worth a damn. This is, you know, this is the America that we're getting cozy with. The Dow took a 16-point lick drop today. As the report says, on Wall Street, investors took the weak employment figures in stride. Screw those working people. The new employment figures were much weaker than economists were expecting. They were only expecting a loss of 50,000 jobs. They got 80, which is actually probably 120,000. See above. Unemployment rate for Hispanic Americans jumped 6.9%. Unemployment rate for African Americans climbed to 9%. And the overall rate's only 5.1%. Gosh, Tony Snow must be right. Racism is dead in America. Democrats in Congress would like to extend unemployment benefits. The Bush administration says that the government's stimulus package, the checks you'll be getting in May, that'll be enough. It'll kick in and everybody will be able to have a real good time. Well, isn't this just beautiful? Meanwhile, the McCain candidate said that the unemployment news, quotes, underlines the need to focus on innovation, which grows the economy and creates an urgent need for effective worker retraining. Huh? I'll go take a nap, John. Oh, by the way, speaking of John McCain, one wonders if this will get, you know, the same kind of coverage that it would be if it was, say, Obama or Clinton. But there's a new book about the McCain candidate called The Real McCain by Cliff Schechter. It's on the way out, and it details... Well, it details the unvarnished life of John McCain. It's a real charmer. And it's got three reporters from Arizona who spoke on the condition of anonymity, because if you're a reporter in Arizona, you know, John can make you disappear into the desert real fast. The story is an advanced copy of the book was examined by the fine folks over at Raw Story. And it turns out, and this is real cute. This is just as sweet as a spring rain. It turns out that John McCain, back in 1992, when he was running for Senate, was out there on the hustings with his wife, Cindy. And according to these reports, Cindy and campaign aide Doug Cole and consultant Wes Gullett all joined him on the trail. And Cindy was playfully twirling McCain's hair and said, "You're getting a little thin up there." McCain got all red in the face and he said, "At least I don't plaster on the makeup like a trollop, you." And the word begins with C and it ends in T, and it's got the United Nations in the middle. That's right. America's moral fiber, war hero John McCain, called his own wife a rhymes with runt. Classy guy. Wonder how James Dobson's going to spin that for the family values crowd.
"Well, you know, it says in 30-second flip-floppians that you're supposed to submit yourself unto your husband, you wives, as the church submits itself unto Christ." Wait a minute, I don't think Christ ever called the church that's not going to work.
John McCain's nickname in high school was McNasty. And Schechter says that there are plenty of examples of John McCain's out-of-control temper. A quote from the book, in February 2008, Tim Russert succinctly described McCain on MSNBC's Morning Joe. A devilish grin spread from ear to ear as Russert, no McCain hater, leaned forward and spoke in a whisper, "He likes to fight." Schechter says, but the big question isn't whether McCain likes to fight, it's who, when, and how. Of course, no one reported the name-calling incident in which that word, my God. You know, if this story could actually get any legs, it suddenly makes other recent foo-frauds over words kind of pale by comparison, doesn't it? Schechter said, members of the media are squeamish covering stuff like this, so they let it go. Back in 92, when people use naughty words, reporters don't know as much what to do with it. Now, some would say that, you know, going back to 92 and finding an instant where a husband called his wife, I'm not going to say it. Don't wait. No bated breath here. I'm not going to say it. It's the kind of stuff that I don't say. Freedom of speech or not. Freedom of speech does not mean freedom to be abusive with speech. And that's one of those words that I just try to kind of keep out of the lexicon. Don't ever want to hear my children using it, so I try not to use it myself. But, of course, you know, the media would actually have to cover this in order for this to be a story. And don't count on that. Finally, a little bit of fallout from Passport Gate. Ann Barrett has been selected as the sacrificial goat on this one. Ann Barrett was the Deputy Assistant Secretary responsible for overseeing passport services at the Department of State, and she is stepping down. Her resignation follows about 2 weeks on the heels of the State Department finding out that Barack Obama's passport file had been accessed. It then the State Department then hastily accessed John McCain's and Hillary Clinton's so that some plausible deniability could be built into the story. The State Departure refused to link her departure to the uproar. She just wants to spend more time with her family. It has nothing. No, there's no connection. I was planning this all along.
I don't know. Maybe somebody could call John McCain and he could call her a C word and, I don't know. No, there's a ton of stuff out there. And I have a feeling we're going to have a ball with all of it this evening. Oh, some new number for those of you who follow, sort of right-wing hate radio because it's like watching a slow-moving train wreck and you just kind of can't help watching. Some interesting data in on Flush Flimball, the oxymoron. A radio consulting firm did some research and found out that Rush Limbaugh's listeners, the people that call themselves ditto heads, Rush Limbaugh has more listeners when he's not speaking than when he does. No, really. I wish... No, I'm not kidding. It's not a joke. This is not the front end of some sort of bit or piece of shtick. Flush Flimball has more listeners when he's not talking than when he does. This is hopeful. He could, Premier Radio Networks or whoever could up his pay to $50 million a year and take him off the air forever, and that would mean he probably had the biggest listenership of all time. And interestingly, as far as percentage of people, listener share in ratings, get this, Limbaugh does worse when he's expressing approval on a topic than when he's gooning on one. That's quite interesting, too. In other words, the ditto heads are tired of hearing Flush Flimball talk about what a great guy George Bush and Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney are. They feel a little bit better when he's just, gooning on Democrats. Because that takes the ditto heads back to the place where they live, where, we've got problems in River City, but the problems are it's the fault of the Democrats. They don't want to be reminded that George W. Bush and Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney have screwed them, blued them, and tattooed them. You want to know what kind of numbers you get when you're the number one talk host in America? When you're America's truth detector, my friends, let me tell you about Barack the Magic Negro. You want to know what kind of numbers that accounts for? When Flush Flimball, greedily chewing up OxyContin for the refreshing burst of flavor, is carrying water for George Bush and Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney, he has a 5.43% average share. It goes up to 5.71%. average share of listeners when he's doing his tired old right-wing Republican
hate radio garbage. And his ratings are highest during the commercials. That tells you where the head of the where the average ditto head's head is. One, the average ditto head's head is bald, and therefore he is avidly tuning in to hear an advertisement for the herbal baldness cure. He is also impotent. He's tuning in during the commercial to hear the ads for the herbal erection medicine that they hustle on Flemball's show. He's also exhausted because he wants to make sure and tune in during the commercials to catch the 1-800 number to order himself a Swedish astronaut mattress. His house is also a wreck, so he needs to be tuned in during Flush's commercials so he can catch the toll-free number to order himself a vacuum cleaner that will pick up bowling balls. I just have this mental image of ditto heads out there whose floors are just covered with bowling balls. The poor little things have to wear elbow pads and knee pads and little helmets to keep from hurting themselves tripping on the bowling balls that are rolling all over the living room floor. Hell, they probably got bowling balls in the floorboards of their cars. So, you know, just a little inside skinny on... Because, you know, we talk about that from time to time. Who in the hell listens to Flush Flemball and actually takes him seriously? Well, there you have it. A filthy, bald guy who can't get it up, get a decent night's sleep, and has trouble getting around his house for all the bowling balls in the way. There's your Flush Flemball ditto head. And he's probably a ditto head from falling over and cracking his little pointy noggin on all the bowling balls all the time. At least it's nice to know what you're up against, isn't it? Oh, yeah. No, you know, that's some of the fun stuff. But there's a ton of good stuff out there. Oh, Dirty Minds in the chat room. Thank you very much, Lottie. You gotta check out the chat room sometime. There are some quick, funny minds in there. Far funnier than that's right, Lottie. Don't forget that they live in steel frame buildings from General Steel. They have to tune in then so they can order their steel frame building because otherwise the average Limbaugh listener doesn't have sense enough to come in out of the rain. Or, as we like to say here in the hills, they also don't have sense enough to pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel. You know, you can just see them dumping that boot over on their own faces and trying to figure out it. Oh, God. But that's where there's more and more and more stuff like this. Hey, can I share a little piece of humor with you? Because you know what? Last week, the last 2 weeks have been incredibly dark. And we got a little sunlight in the sky today, and it just changed my attitude. You ever been to McSweeney's.net? McSweeney's.net, McSweeney's.net. There's some great writing there. This is a particularly nice piece of writing. Piece of satire, I suppose you'd call it, by Andy F. Bryan. Got sent to me in the email. Andy F. Bryan. Andy's good. I hope he doesn't mind me doing a little characterization of his work. Cookie Monster searches deep within himself and asks, "Is me really Monster? Me know. Me have problem. Me love cookies. Me tend to get out of control when me see cookies.
Me know it not natural to react so strongly to cookies, but me have weakness. Me know me do wrong. Me know it isn't normal. Me see disapproving looks, me see stares, me hurt inside. When me get back to apartment after cookie binge, me can't stand looking in mirror. Fur matted with chocolate chip smears and infested with crumbs. Me try, but me never able to wash all of them out. Me don't think me is monster. Me just furry blue person who love cookies too much. Me no ask for it. Me just born that way. Me was thinking, and me just don't get it. Why is me a monster? No one else called monster on Sesame Street. Well, no one who isn't really monster. Two-headed monster have two heads, so he real monster. Hairy monster strong and look angry, so he probably real monster too, but is me really monster? Me thinks me have serious problem. Me thinks me addicted. But since when it acceptable to call addict monster? It affliction. It disease. It burden. But does it make me monster? How can they be so callous? Me know there's something wrong with me. But who in Sesame Street doesn't suffer from mental disease or psychological disorder? They don't call the vampire with math fetish monster, and me pretty sure he undead and drink blood. No one call Grover monster, despite frequent delusional episodes and obsessive-compulsive tendencies. And the obnoxious Red Grover? Oh, but his name, Elmo. Yes, Elmo, live all day in imaginary world and no one call him monster. No, they think he cute. And Big Bird? Don't get me started on Big Bird. He unnaturally gigantic talking canary. How is that not monster? Snuffleupagus not supposed to exist. Woolly mammoths extinct. His very existence monstrous. Me least like monster. Me maybe have unhealthy obsession, but me no monster. No. Me wrong. Me too hard on self. Me no have unhealthy obsession. Me love cookies, but it no hurt anyone. Me just enthusiast. Everyone has something they like most, something they get excited about. Why not me? Me perfectly normal. Me like cookies. So what? Cookies delicious. Cookies do not make one monster. Everyone loves cookies. Me no monster. Me okay guy. Me okay guy who eat cookies. Who me kidding? Me know me never actually eat cookies. Me only crumble cookies in mouth, but me no swallow. Me can't swallow. Me no have no esophagus. Me no have no trachea. Me only have black fabric throat. Me not supposed to be able even to talk. Me no eat cookies. Me destroy cookies. Me crush cookies. Me mutilate cookies. Me make it so no one get cookies. Everyone right. Me really is cookie monster.
Andy Bryan, little piece of inspired insanity. Just had to share that with you guys. All right, coffee break's over. Back on your heads. Because there's story after story after story. Oh, by the way, you know how it is with Republicans and, you know, Repiglicans and their flag lapel pins, right? They're like little, I don't know, idols that they wear on the little personal avatars or something. And you just know that Repiglick and Congress critters have yellow ribbons just festooned, little, you know, the little yellow magnetic plastic yellow ribbons that are made in factories in China by 9-year-old slave laborers who are chained to a table for, you know, 15, 16 hours a day. Yeah, you know that right-wing Republican Congress critters, you know that their vehicles are just festooned with them, and everybody, son, I noticed you came to work this morning and you didn't have a yellow ribbon Chinese magnet on your automobile. Son, we can't have people like that around here. You're either going to have to get with the program, or you're going to have to find somewhere else to work.
Okay, yes, Congressman, I'll go get me a yellow Chinese magnetic yellow ribbon to put on my car.
That's right, son, because we need you to show how good a patriot you are. Where's your flag pin, boy? It's like that. So this past Saturday, Congress critter Patrick McHenry, who is a Repiglican from North Carolina, he decided to goon on a soldier. No, really. The soldier, apparently, in Iraq was following orders and wouldn't let Patriot McHenry go to the gym without the proper credentials. You need to hear for yourself. How McHenry talks about this young man. As quickly as I reload the audio, that is. Here we go.
So you actually have to go there to see it for yourself. And there has been a significant turnaround. We spent 2 hours with General Petraeus. We were all in and out of Blackhawk helicopters wearing flak jackets and Kevlar helmets. I mean, it was a significant eye-opener for me in terms of being in Georgia to see our men and women and the success that they're having.
Now, this is all by way of lead-up to the testimony that will go down in Congress tomorrow when General Petraeus comes in and says, you know what we need? You know what we need for the surge? More surging. The surging needs a surge. We've got to surge the surge. And that's why we don't need to be sending any troops home anytime soon. Need to just keep them over there. Because they're surgeons, so doggone good. They are some of the surgeonest surgers I've ever seen surge in all my existence of being a general of surges. So all the little Repiglickans are out there talking to the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking faithful, telling them how good we're a surgeon and how well the surge is a-working. And so, you know, far be it from Congress critter Patrick McHenry not to do his part in the war effort, too, what with him being a chicken hawk and everything.
And we stayed the evening, spent the night in the grain tub, and in the pool house of one of Saddam's palaces. Well, weird, got to be honest with you. But I felt safe. And so in the morning I got up early. Not that I make this a great habit, but I went to the gym because I just couldn't sleep and everything else. Well, sure enough, the guard wouldn't let me in. Said I didn't have the correct credentials. 5 o'clock in the morning, I haven't had sleep. I was not very happy with this two-bit security guard.
I know the audio's a little tinny. Sometimes you're limited in that way on the internets. But you heard it, right? You heard it. Out of patriotic Republican Patrick McHenry's own mouth. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. I haven't had sleep. I was not very happy with this two-bit security guard. Well, let's see how he... Let's back up just a hair and see how it is he treated the two-bit security guard.
Sleep and everything else. Well, sure enough, the guard wouldn't let me in. Said I didn't have the correct credentials. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. I haven't had sleep. I was not very happy with this two-bit security guard. And so, you know, I said, I want to see your supervisor. 30 minutes later, after The supervisor wasn't happy with me. They escorted me back to my room. It happens. Well, I guess I didn't need to work out anyway.
What the hell is the point of this story? I mean, I'm a relatively intelligent individual and everything, but what? You flew on the people's dime all the way to Iraq, Congressman? And you're pissed off because you couldn't get on the stair stepper at 5 a.m. in Saddam's old palace in Iraq? And then you demean the guy who's got guard duty at 5 a.m.? You ass! I mean, you pompous jerk. I don't want to say, and you know what? You know how these repiglicans are. It wasn't as he delivered it. You know, so I said, I want to see your supervisor in 30 minutes. It wasn't like that at all. Damn it, boy! Don't you know who I am? I'll have your stripes for this. Where's your sergeant?
Oh, Sarge? I got a jerk here. Ain't got no credentials, wants to get into the gym.
It's all right, son. Hang on a minute. I'll be there. Sergeant comes walking up, you know, kind of tucking his military-issue T-shirt into his military-issue pants. Congress critter looks at him and says, "You know who I am." "Well, sir, it looks to me it's 5 o'clock in the morning. Looks like you're somebody who is somewhere he's not supposed to be." And he harangued the supervisor, who I'm guessing is a sergeant, and the little, you know, E1 or E2 or E-whatever guy who had overnight guard duty on the door to the gym, harangued them for 30 minutes. He also went on and said that a person died from rocket attacks during his stay in the Green Zone. Unfortunately, for at least Congressman McHenry, a U.S. Embassy official said that there were no fatalities from that rocket attack at all. Gee, you reckon that the mainstream news media is going to have a newsgasm over this and scream about what a liar he is? Because, see, this is just out-and-out lying. No, no, those are reserved for Hillary-gasms. "I was a liar. He lied about people, about rocket fire in the Green Zone killing people. Can't be trusted. He's a damn liar." Nope, sorry. I don't know. This, two or three other liberal radio programs, going to be the only place you're going to hear the story of what an absolute, unmitigated, full-on, eight-cylinders jerk Patrick McHenry, North Carolina, is. Two-bit security guard. Now, I don't like the Iraqcupation. I didn't like the Iraq War. I don't like the upcoming bi-consonant war against Iran. Not even a little bit. But I don't hold that against some boy from East Aboga who's standing guard duty 8,000 miles from home or more between the hours of, what, midnight and 6 or 4 and 6. I don't know how all the rotations are. But that young man, probably 18, 19, 20 years old tops, so lonesome he could just bust, scared, happy to be doing guard duty and not toddling around in some the poorly armored Humvee somewhere. Wishes he could see his mama. Wishes he could see his daddy. Sure would like to have a glass of Granny's sweet tea. Misses the singing at the church on Sunday. Remembers what it was like playing football on Friday nights in that little stadium. Remembers what it was like sitting down to take the SAT and the ACT, and doing pretty good, really. And then finding out there wasn't no way in God's sweet earth that he was going to college nowhere. But back at school that day, there'd been that feller with the green uniform on who told him all he had to do was do 4 years in the United States Army, and the Army would pay for his college for him. And he signed up. He lived through the sanctioned brutality of 6 weeks of basic, and then however many more weeks of his specialty training. And then they up and shipped his butt to Iraq, and won't nobody let him go the hell home, because they keep a-telling him that he's a surgeon. All he can tell from his surge is that he's got some twaddle-talking, pipsqueak, horse's ass of a Republican congressman up in his face at 5 o'clock in the damn morning, wanting to go in and use the stair climber, and he don't have no credentials. And it'll be a cold day in hell before he lets anybody into that room without no credentials, because you know what? Life as an E3 ain't so damn good, but it's a far sight better than life as an E-damn-1. Which is what he'll be if he lets Congressman Horse's ass into the gym. I mean, that's about the size of it, isn't it? That's the guy, that is the guy, that is his world that Congressman McHenry called a 2-bit security guard. Hey, Congressman McHenry, you POS. The 2-bit security guards work for Blackwater. And they get about $125,000 a year of my money for doing it. That boy you called a 2-bit security guard, all in the world he's got is his dreams of going home, you SOB. And you call him a 2-bit security guard. That young man's got more guts in the grime under his fingernails than you've got in your whole misbegotten, sorry, right-wing, repig-licking being. Maybe you got it backwards, Congressman. Maybe he's not a 2-bit security guard. Maybe you're a 2-bit political pimp. Where were you, Congressman McHenry, when your country needed you? Now, I don't have the records in front of me, but, you know, I'm not much of a betting man, but if I was a betting man, I'm just about willing to bet. Wouldn't take much effort at all to bet that when Congressman McHenry had a chance to serve his country, Congressman McHenry, like his hero Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney, had, oh, what did Cheney call him? Other, what were the other obligations? No, not obligations. Other plans? 2-bit security guard. Jesus, I wish we had real media out there, because whatever his district is, Congressman McHenry, he'd be answering for that two-bit security guard wisecrack all over his district until he did not dare show his face. There's a district needs a Democrat. There's a district needs somebody who will actually, you know, honor the troops as opposed to just talking about honoring the troops. What a pissant. We'll be back. Start the third hour. Jump in if you want to. You're more than welcome. This is The Horn.
What can you see from your window? I can't see anything from mine. Flags on the side of the highway, and scripture on grocery store signs. Maybe 18 was too early, maybe 30 or 40 is too. You get your chance to make peace with the man, or is sent down his angels. Mamas and grandmamas love you, 'cause that's all they know how to do. You never planned on the bombs in the sand, or sleeping in back home in a week. Turn 22 and we'd celebrate you in a bar tent by the creek. Baby, we're just about be here, and your very last tour would be up. You won't be back.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
It would appear that I have touched a nerve. Just going to share something with you real quick. I told you about what the coal slaves did this past Saturday. I told you that they have a taste for intimidation. They have a taste for thuggish tactics. You want proof? Beyond what I've already told you about? You want proof? I'd be happy to share it with you. Got an email here. Says it comes from James Brewster. And the email is godscoalminer@live.com. It was sent to my Gmail address. The subject line says, "We see you." And the message says, "Keep talking." We know where you live. Do you now, James? If indeed that is your real name, but I don't know. You're a mountaintop remover. You could be stupid enough to make that threat under your real name. Or perhaps this is all just something made up. But you see, that's what you get if you try to stand up nonviolently for your community. You get threats against your children and your wife and your grandbabies and yourself. Keep talking. We know where you live. Friends of coal. Gonna have to try harder than that, buddy. Gonna have to try a whole lot harder. There's a saying out there, boy. Come hard or don't come at all. What are you gonna do? Burn me out? What are you gonna do, brave mountaintop removal boy? Slave? What are you gonna do? Assault a woman or a kid? Maybe you'll tell your little coal thug kids to beat up my kids in school. Oh, you're a brave one, aren't you, buddy? You're a brave one. This is how they are. Are you surprised? James, I've taken the liberty to forward your email to a few people so that the threat is all... Isn't this amazing? Isn't this the neat part of the internet, James? Your threat is already all the way around the planet in less time than it took me to read it. Poor moron, you can't even use punctuation or capitalization. You bloody your knuckles when you're walking on them up to the job site there, slave? Do you? Nanette, it's already on the way to you. It's on the way to you, John Fox. It's on the way to you, Ben Birch. It's on the way to Judy. But that's what you deal with. That's why I tell you that the people who stand up against these corporate slaves are the bravest people I know. I was going to move on to another topic. But he wants me to keep talking about them. I'll move on to another topic. I sure will. But you need to understand that the mountaintop removal slaves are terrified people. In all truth, they are more to be pitied than despised. Because they live every day in terror. They live in absolute fear of their masters. They won't stand up and be free because it's more important to them to have a new pickup truck every couple of years and some clothes made by a little 9-year-old slave laborer chained to a table in China and a 46-inch big screen TV that they got over to the Walmart than it is to have a community where their children have a future. That is the level of terror that inflicts the souls of these pathetic, pitiful people. And it is heartbreaking. They are capable of violence. They are capable of attempts at intimidation. Their corporate masters approve of it. They can't win in the battle of free speech. They can't win in the marketplace of ideas because everybody sees what they're doing and everybody, with the exception of them, can see how wrong, how foolish, how short-sighted, and how absolutely evil what they're doing is. But see, when you become a slave to a Consol or a Massey, they put your slave blinders on, and they tell you what clothes to wear and when to wear them, and where to be, and what to do when you get there. That's the life of a slave. And the fact that it comes with a few carnival gimcracks doesn't make them any less slaves. And they think that because they've got the legislature and the governor and the congressmen and the senators all bought off, and the courts, and the police, that they can do anything they want. The only problem is, while they've read their little flyers from their corporate masters, they've never read the words of Mahatma Gandhi. Gandhi said, "First they ridicule you, then they fight you, then you win." You see, a death threat to one of these pathetic slaves would mean something. Because they live in fear. And they fear what will happen to their immortal souls after they're done doing their damnedest on this earth. Death threats don't mean anything to me. Death threats... Phooey. Try that with somebody that it works on, buddy. I'll be here tomorrow night, and the next night, and the night after that, and the night after that, just like I've been here every night for, oh, goodness me, more than 4 years now. And you'll have to do more than threaten me to get me to stop. Hey, I got an idea. Have your bosses there at, if I'm so dangerous, have your bosses there write me about a $25 million check, and I'll shut up. Because I'll take that money and I'll fully fund Coal River Mountain Watch and the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition and the Highlands Conservancy and the Anstead Historic Preservation Society. I'll fully fund everybody here on the Horn. And then I'll step back and watch them beat your ass. How's that? Deal? No, I didn't think so. A lot cheaper and easier just to threaten people. What are you going to do, slash my tires? They sell more tires. You going to sugar my tank? There's more cars out there. And you know what? Because of what I've been doing, there are thousands and thousands of people behind me that will rise up one after another. You can't silence us because you can't silence the truth. You understand? I know you're a little slow. That's why you work for who you work for. But I think you can understand that, can't you? Brother. Well. Oh, dear. I've been had. That was a joke. That was not real. I apologize. Says, I just got another email saying, scroll down. Just kidding. Great, you're keeping the yeah. So, yeah. My apologies. My sincere apologies. What I said about the coal people is true. But that was an attempt at humor. And I didn't scroll down. Oh, I'm a little embarrassed. If you've received the CC that I sent out, my apologies. So, you know, there you have it. But you know what? I was willing to treat it as real because I know far too many people, far, far too many people who have lived with this kind of conduct. And it is, that's how they behave, you see. And I took it as gospel. No, it was just a joke. Not mine. See, that's the thing. When you do all this stuff on the fly, sometimes, you know, it comes in, you read it, and you go with it, and you don't get a chance to, you know, subject it to the filter. I feel a little stupid. But for all the right reasons. For all the right reasons. There is a ton of other stuff out there. Serious stuff. Real stuff. And I'm going to get to it. I've got to have a way to... I'm going to step back for a couple of minutes. What it was is the email didn't have... It had what I read there, and there was stuff that was below the screen that I would have had to scroll to get to, and it didn't look like there was anything to scroll, so, you know, I sort of made an ass of myself. So, yeah. Not to worry. Sorry, that just really threw me. I don't often get thrown. But that did. And I apologize for that. So let's take a little break. And we'll come back in a few. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob.
Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah. Some call me the gangster of love. Some people call me Maurice. Cause I speak of the pompous of love. In the sun, I'm a joker, I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker. I get my love in all.
did see. Really love your peaches, wanna shake your tree. Lovey-dovey, lovey-dovey, lovey-dovey all the time.
Hey, even in the midst of stuff like that, I can still jock up a perfectly appropriate song. I mean, you got to admit, if anything is perfectly appropriate, that is it. Also, during the break, I answered a phone call, and the practical joker is on the line. Hey.
Well, good evening.
Howdy.
Hello, horn listeners. This is David in Tennessee wishing to make amends for a very badly thought-out practical joke that got further than he ever expected.
Well, some of us, when we see white space below the end, below an email, we figure that's the end of it. So.
Well, it is an old email funny where you leave enough room such that you think it's over, but being the email guy that has received more emails than most people do in a lifetime, I didn't think it would get past you, but I forgot that you're working under incredible duress, and you're literally flying by the seat of your pants, and by golly, you know, I come from a long line of evil pranksters. It goes back generations. It's in fact, my father made a living out of it, but that's a topic for another show. But, you know, I'm a bad boy. I get no cookies at bedtime tonight. Gee willikers, I'm a stinker.
Well, yeah, there's a greater truth here. I mean, there's something, you know, we can learn from anything, David.
If I may speak over the host, the most important part of this to take away is that there are at least 25 emails, as I, you know, conjured out of the air, there are at least 25 emails between the ears of evil bastards that they either don't know how to send or are afraid to send or are too lazy to send. The sentiment, that's why this rang. Listeners, trust me on this one, as if you could right now. The reason this went so far with Bob is he knows they're out there, and he's already said that, and I want to affirm that. That's the last thing I really want to say is the reason it worked is I managed to let it sound real enough.
Yeah, it did. No capitalization, no punctuation, and frankly, around here there are people who would pick a handle like God's Coal Miner.
I wish I hadn't done it so well.
You know, hey, it was beautiful. If you were Ashton Kutcher, you would have just walked out from around the corner and tell me I'd been punked.
Oh, God.
And, you know, giving me the trucker hat and everything to go with it.
Yeah, well, you are too kind. Mostly right now, since I have caused such a stir and I have put such a big spoon in such an evil, stinky pot, I'm going to say goodnight now because I don't want to get in any more trouble. But
well, you're not in any to begin with. Just to reinforce the fact. I know too many people that have been subjected to this kind of crap, and it's real. I mean, I know people whose windows have been shot out. I know people who have had their tires slashed. I know people who have had their children attacked at school. I know people who have had how many times have they threatened to burn out Judy Bonds?
I don't want to think about it. I really don't want to think about it.
But the thing is, that truly, David, that is why I admire these people so much. Because, you know, they're not living in some penthouse apartment in New York City decrying the,
Oh, dear, the depredations of the corporate coal industry and what they are doing to those poor hillbillies in Appalachia. These are the Appalachian people standing up for themselves in the face of this kind of thuggery from the coal slaves.
I've seen that assemblage that's just slightly lower in elevation from those evil folks in those pretty sky blue t-shirts. And no, those folks that were assembled around you, that you were part of that group, those folks don't have any confusion with effort and accomplishment. If you're overlooking Central Park from 21 floors up and you write a big ass check for the rest of the world, but what for you is 0.01% of your donations that year, then you can confuse a little effort with a lot of accomplishment. No, that priest in the face of that, you know, that's the kind of mentality that went across that bridge in Selma. That stuff matters, and that's a big reason that I wanted to call in, because I was making a joke that I thought would stay between you and I. It was in bad taste. Certainly, you could potentially forgive that. It went further than I wanted it. And if the rest of the world is forgiving, thank you, rest of the world. But there is, as strange as it may seem, I have a standard for myself, and, you know, the rest of the world standard may differ, but what the heck. So thank you, rest of the world.
Indeed. And you know, that's the nice thing about being liberals. We're a forgiving lot. Not that, you know, but, you know, you haven't, you know, attacked any countries or blown up any buildings or so, you know, it's not like there's a whole boatload of forgiven to be called for. It's just a practical joke went sideways. Sometimes they do. But it's a little nervous around here, what with my next door neighbor getting blown away a few nights ago and,
oh geez. Well, I'll let you take care of that one.
Yeah. Well, like I said, David, and this is something, you know, don't run away, because there's more to, you know, it's always an onion, isn't it?
Grasshopper. There are many layers.
Yeah, parfait got layers too. But you know what? This ain't no parfait.
Oh no.
But this is a country that is teetering on a hair trigger. That side always has been, and as they see their power base pulling away a little bit more, they get more so. And we are jumpier than a long-tailed cat in a rocking chair factory too.
Let's go back to that power base idea. We have a stridently progressive, apparently Catholic, elected to president. That began a series of assassinations and murders that killed a progressive movement. How many?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, they did John Kennedy, and then they said, hey, this ain't so hard.
Well, you know, whatever. Oh, that guy in Memphis talking about stopping the Vietnam War and not seeing black men in Memphis be maimed by a garbage truck and told, you didn't think enough about safety, you go home less a leg, leave us alone. That's a synopsis of a true story. Ooh, gee willikers, Bobby Kennedy goes to Appalachia. He sees it. He gets it. Oh, we got to kill his ass too.
Yeah.
That's how...
And it proved to be terribly easy, and look what they did. They succeeded in putting down, well, let's see, the Vietnam War went on for how much longer after the 1968 elections? Another 6-7 years?
4 for sure, at the level that was incredibly deleterious to the entire nation and all its resources. Ooh, sound familiar?
Yeah. So, yeah, I get it, David. Don't sweat it. I think with the podcast or the archive or something, I'll put a disclaimer in front that says, warning, there is a practical joke gone sideways about two-thirds of the way through the program. Don't flip out.
Well, I have learned yet again from my mistakes, and I'll be better behaved in the future, I promise.
Well, if Bob had been paying attention to what he was doing, he would have seen that the little blue bar to the right of the computer screen was still at the top, which meant that there was more stuff to scroll to. But Bob did not. Bob went on the fly because, frankly, I got a little unnerved Saturday.
How could you not? That's serious business. I'm sorry. Based on what I know about what you experienced and those around you experienced, you were one of about probably 300 mental decisions scattered among 30 underinformed, highly programmed, undereducated, angry, frightened people. Those people had about 300 decisions scattered among them, where if any one of those 300 decisions had gone from A to B, somebody would have pulled a trigger, chopped a rock, thrown an axe, moved an automobile, such that somebody got hurt.
Yeah, I fully expected that company wife to put a rock upside one of the father's heads. Wouldn't have surprised me not one little bit.
I've only seen one photograph and read and heard, but did I overstate?
No, you didn't. And see, that's the other thing. And it's something that the other side doesn't get. Death and going to the dentist have a lot in common. It's how you get there that scares the dickens out of you. The drive from home to the dentist office is about a million times worse than what happens in the chair. And frankly, in the grand scheme of things, it's how you get dead that's a lot scarier than being dead. That make any sense?
Frederick March in the 30s, All Quiet on the Western Front. He looks around in a perfectly lit black and white movie about the horrors of war that was way ahead of its time. And he says to a fellow soldier, it's not dying, it's how we die that scares us.
Yeah. And so, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm rethinking things. Maybe I don't have any business taking my kids to these events. I never expected it to have the potential for violence, but it did. But you know what? They never shook. They never cried. They never said, Daddy, we got to leave now. They just stuck their chins out in the air. As proud and as brave as anybody else who was there, and I've never been prouder of them.
They took their attitude from their father. They took their attitude from their leader. They took their attitude from their head coach. So, yes, in their world, they saw you being who you are, what you are, and they went forward. Were I you, I would make sure they understood what a glorious moment that was. But, again, were I you, there is no way in hell I'd be on a goddamn dirt road in the middle of stinking nowhere. Take those kids where there are cameras and sidewalks and streetlights and make sure they let that process become part of their psyche where there are witnesses. You folks were a little bit short of witnesses where you were.
Well, there sure would have been a whole bunch of people with sky blue T-shirts on. We didn't see nothing.
Precisely.
Yeah.
You know how that works. I know how that works. Yes. Let them see confrontation, but let them see it where there's other folks looking. Third party. It's a wonderful concept.
Yep. Yeah. And the thing is, that's what drives me crazy about this. If I had had any inkling that those people in their baby blue T-shirts that had to be there on their day off or lose their jobs, if I'd had any idea they'd have been there, I'd never took my kids. I've done a lot of navel gazing over this, David.
I'm sure you have. I am sure of that.
Of course, if Agnes had been with me, she probably would have run the whole lot of them off.
Now, there's a thought. There's a thought. A strike-motivated redhead saying, you need to leave us alone, and going forward from that as a starting point, she'd have cleaned that rat's nest out in no time at all, and they would have been better for it.
It would have been it wouldn't have been 5 minutes before she broke into the part where she says, you know, I'm not mad at you. I'm disappointed in you. And that would have been all she wrote. I've never seen anybody be able to withstand that one, including myself.
Well, yes. And I hope I don't get that call later.
David, take care.
And I, again, thank you for the understanding, and I very much appreciate the understanding of the Horn listenership.
Don't worry about it. And you know, no need to run the warm bath or anything.
Oh, no. It would just be, it would be grieving and the standard techniques for getting through grieving. Loud music and quiet sipping.
Yeah. Take care.
I shall.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy David in Central Tennessee. Mostly it's on me. I really should have seen that there was more there, but again, I'm guilty. I'm guilty of knowing what these people are capable of. Dan, if you're listening, don't hang this thing up on the web until I can do a disclaimer to run in the front of it. I don't want anybody else getting upset. Let's keep on the phones. Let's go over to the other side of the Tennessee, other side of Tennessee, East Tennessee, unprotected Tennessee, thanks to the help of the Tennessee legislature. Luke, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, fine. Like I say, I mainly called in just because I didn't know with you being on the air at the same time if you'd seen the whole thing on Nightline. It looks like tonight, or the thing that they had on at 6:30 news, it looks like tonight they're going to go fixing cameras in Don Blankenship's face and watch him run.
Well, they've released the video on the web, and we've got it up at the headonradionetwork.com website, Luke.
Oh, okay.
You know, he said the quote from Blankenship was that he bumped him with his camera. Well, it's clear nobody got bumped. I mean, they
bumped right up to him.
Yeah, the camera was nowhere near him when Blankenship said, "You go taking pictures of people, boy, you're liable to get shot."
Like I say, it wasn't so close, he's out of focus. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. There was space between them,
yeah.
Obviously. Because when he does get up to where he can touch the camera, you know, things get fuzzy and out of focus, and you can see his ugly, slimy little paw covering up the lens.
So, it's going to be interesting tonight. You know, maybe if he ticked off Brian Ross, this could get interesting for a few days.
Well, it would be nice. It would be nice if the country would see what a bunch of thugs are doing to our region. And what I mentioned as I was bringing you on the air, Luke, mm-hmm. You are officially unprotected now.
No, I don't know.
Are you aware of that?
No, which one's this?
The state of Tennessee.
Oh. What stupid thing have we done now?
No, well, no, it's not that you did your legislature actually did a noble thing. You did the right thing.
Well, sometimes even we get through something right by accident. You know how that goes.
Your subcommittee in the Tennessee House had, the Tennessee Senate had, and even the Republican leader of the Tennessee Senate had co-sponsored a bill that would have banned mountaintop removal in the Appalachians of East Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
It went over to the House, and in the House Environment Subcommittee, they voted down HB 3348 that would have banned mountaintop removal mining in Tennessee. So you're wide open now.
Oh, well.
It's going to get, you know, and here's, you know, here you are sitting on the verges of the single most visited national park in the entire United States national park system, and that includes, Yellowstone and everything else. But the Smokies get more visitors than any other national park. And some gang of godforsaken Republicans probably with some mugwump Democrats on the assist in the House Subcommittee on the Environment, killed the ban on mountaintop removal mining because somewhere, you know, and figure out where they...
Who spent the right amount of money? Where?
Yeah. Let's see. Voting against the mountaintop removal ban, William Baird, R. Jacksboro, George Fraley, D. Winchester, Joe McCord, R. Maryville, Frank Nicely, R. Strawberry Plains, and John Tidwell, D. New Johnsonville.
Well, the two R's you just last mentioned are just right up the road. And the D you mentioned in Winchester, shoot, he's over in the middle of the state. He's over near the Alabama border.
Yeah, so he don't give a damn.
Yeah, I was going to say, so he don't care. It ain't going to affect him sitting over there.
But look for mountaintop removal, Luke, to come to communities near you.
Oh.
And so y'all are going to have to do what folks here have done. Your government's not going to help you, and you're going to have to band together.
I know. Well, you know, the thing I always tell people if they want to know about how mining is, you can go down to around Cleveland, Tennessee, near Chattanooga, and there's a place down there called Copper Basin. And Copper Basin is actually in the last couple of years, actually started to have grass grow again. Just down where they used to have big old copper mines. And since I was a kid, up till about 10 years ago, maybe, if you wanted to go down to Copper Basin, you knew what Mars looked like.
Yeah.
Because Copper Basin looked like Mars. Nothing grew. It was dirt. And it was kind of a reddish dirt. And that's pretty much what it was. So, you know, like I say, they've been through mining, how mining companies take care of you. So, but, oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing I told you. Let me go ahead and get this out before
sure,
I forget it.
Sure.
I told you, and when I called in, I said, you know, isn't it amazing? I actually finally learned a fact on the Sunday morning show. It was totally by accident, but I learned a fact.
Yes.
I want to think it was on the U-Boat Captain Wolf Blitz's show when they had their last 30 minutes when they had their reporters on talk and they got yakking between each other. If it's either that or it was on Stephanopoulos' show, I can't remember which one it was on. But they got to mention, and one of them mentioned it, and I don't even think they even realized what they mentioned. The fact that the person who should be our target, Senator McCain, you know, everybody's put out their little proposals, you know, on different subjects. And they were talking about the fact that, you know what, under Senator McCain's health care proposal, Senator McCain is not covered. That if he were not in the Senate, his insurance people could throw him off of his insurance just if his plan goes through because he has a pre-existing condition.
Insanity?
Skin cancer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, there's some rumblings out there that his cancer situation is not everything that he's releasing to the public.
Yeah, there's some issues about that, but they were talking about it, and they acted like everybody knew when they were mentioned. I'm sitting there going, when was this reported? I have not seen this. I mean, when you all are on the bus, where's the film where you all asking him about this? I'd really like to see it.
Well, but see, there won't be any of that because there weren't any questions asked. You know, I'm sure.
What's your favorite color?
Yeah, I'm sure McCain's going to get all upset about this. Maybe he'll call his wife the C word again or something.
Well, have you noticed, though? Here's something good. Have you noticed how awfully concerned Tim Russert was this Sunday morning about how can Hillary relate to people when she's got her and her husband have $100 million? Now, my question is, okay, let me see the tape of when you asked John McCain the same question. Because Cindy is well over $100 million. So tell me how John McCain relates to people, the poor downtrodden folks.
Well, but see, he only married the money. He didn't go out and make it. So he doesn't have to answer for it. It's his wife or daddy that made all that filthy lucre. So, you know, it wouldn't be fair to ask Senator McCain about that. I mean, he's a straight talker. He's a maverick. You can't ask Maverick where the money comes from.
But of course, of course, at the same time, we also can't ask Maverick there, when's the last time you flip-flopped since you keep saying, well, I'm independent because of my immigration stance? You go, well, was that the one before you flip-flopped? Which stance is that, the stance you had 2 years ago, the stance you got now, which are 180 degrees apart? A couple years ago when you said, oh, it's evil to put up that fence, and now in the last couple of months it's been, oh, let's build that fence higher.
You know, that's because he's McBush. You know, make the pie higher, make the fence higher, you know, Bush, McCain, who can tell?
We're going to send in a few hundred more thousand more people. Come on, a few more troops, yeah. That's where we're going to handle our health care. We're going to get them out of the country. Get them over there.
Yeah, we're surging the surge like no surge has ever surged before.
Isn't it amazing on the whole surge thing that no one's bothered to mention the fact that apparently our guys' jobs now is we're hitmen. That's our job is that apparently this fellow Sauter in October has a good chance of maybe becoming the government. That when they have these next little elections, that his people are going to go vote in big numbers.
Well, that's going to be fun. That's going to be a lot of fun. That's going to be a lot of fun, Luke, because then we'll just be sort of replicating the whole screw up that wound up with Hamas running things in the West Bank, and that's worked out real well.
Well, as I say, you know, on the last election, Sauter's people didn't vote, and that's how Maliki got into power. Now, isn't it going to be amazing this next time when Sauter's people decide, hey, we're going to go vote, because believe it or not, they've driven so many people out of the country, we're the majority. And it's going to be interesting to watch.
It's going to be interesting
to see what they put out. I'm sure it'll come out in the middle at the end of some long thing that, oh, yeah, anybody on there, El Sauter's party is now unable to vote. Sorry.
Yeah, no purple fingers, okay? I mean, No.
Yeah, well, if you got that, we'll give you the different finger, you know.
Well, we've been giving that to them for a while now, haven't we?
Well, you saw that the Iraqi people were just so thrilled that the other thing that slipped through in the last couple of days that went under that radar was, amazingly enough, Blackwater's contract got renewed.
No, imagine that.
You know, isn't that amazing how I didn't see a whole lot of news stories on that?
You mean the two-bit security guards?
Yeah, them there. They got re-signed up for another year.
Nice work if you can get it. Hey, Luke, I got to roll on. I'm going to try to hit one more call before I go. Talk to you later. Hey, Nightline, what, 11 o'clock tonight?
11:30 around here, but I don't know. You know, I assume it's the same.
After the late local news. Okay, yeah. There. You can tell how much TV I watch.
That's okay.
All right. Later, Luke. Bye. It'll be during the middle of the horn section, so you'll need a TiVo or something, but Perils of Blankenship. You know, I'd watch that video. That's another reason I took that whole thing seriously. That's how they think. You run around taking pictures of me, you're liable to get shot. And they call us hillbillies. Jesus. Let's see who's up next. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Oops.
Yeah, I know. I'm a dummy.
We slept. Kind of like going down a mountainside and oops, we slipped. And we just fell head over heels in love with Georgia.
Yeah, it was wet and that road was dangerous.
Yeah, it was wet. Hey, enough is enough, people. Don't you think?
On which front?
On every front. Enough. And no, hey, I'm talking to my Arab brothers. I'm talking to my Israeli brothers. I'm talking to my Iraqi brothers. To my brothers across this planet. Enough is enough. Haven't you been used enough? Haven't you been used enough, United States of America? Haven't you been twisted and turned against your own children? Or just God's sake. I mean, I'm saying God's sake because it's their term, okay? It's enough. It's time that we stop and just look around and think. Just think, Bob. That's what your daddy taught you to do. He told you, just think, Bob. Don't think what I tell you. Don't think what I teach you. Don't think what I think. Think for yourself. Think for yourself for a change. Don't ask me for the answers to your problems. Think outside of the box. The one they got us in, the one they've had us in since what? The time when the first shaman came out of the cave and said, lightning, oh, I can control that. Yeah, go stand underneath that tree. And that guy got fried. He says, see, I told him to stand under the tree, and the gods killed him, right?
Yeah.
And that's what they've done to us, Bob. They told us to go stand under the tree until the lightning strikes us. And then we are...
Well, it's like Sonny Perdue, the governor of Georgia, going to the state house steps to pray for rain, but only after he's found out from the meteorologist that it might sprinkle that day.
There you go. Bob, it is that simple. The poor and the sad and the underrepresented people of Iraq, those people, not the ones that said bam, or the Al-Qaeda, for God's sake, Bob. The Al-Qaeda had nothing to do with Iraq, and they don't have a damn thing to do with it today.
But they sure do have a lot to do, you know, for a made-up bunch. They've got a hell of a lot to do with our politics, don't they, Bob?
Yeah, they do, because they don't exist. They do not, only in the minds of fools, Bob.
Yeah, I know. Kind of like repig-licking ethics, you know. It's like the Easter Bunny and stuff. It ain't real.
Okay. I hate thinking about Republicans, because every time I think about a Republican, any Republican, anybody that votes Republican, I think of a guy that is, you know, just standing there with his head stuffed firmly up between his cheeks of his, you know, and it's just twisted around. He's got his whole body stuffed up his anal orifice. Okay? Excuse me for saying it.
Yeah, and then you get a family values, right-wing, conservative, Christian congressman going to Iraq and calling the 19-year-old kid who's sworn to fight and die for his country
Bob,
a two-bit security guard.
Bob, first he is sworn to obey the lawful orders of his superiors.
Yeah, and his superior told him, I don't care if it's God Almighty. He ain't got credentials. He don't get into the gym, son.
That's right. See, they are not Republican or Democrat. They're just kids. And they're sworn to do something, and they took an oath to it, right?
Yeah.
What oath does an American citizen take? None, Bob.
Nope.
None of us, as American citizens, take an oath. We're born American citizens, and when we take the responsibility of an American citizen and say, what is that word, no mas, huh?
Yeah.
No more. It's enough. It's time.
But, you know, I'm with that kid on that, Bob, because you know what? I don't care how high and mighty the congressman acts at 5 o'clock in the morning. I wouldn't be willing to go to the stockade for him.
No, I wouldn't either. Hey, but Bob, we have to tell our children to not obey these kind of orders. We have to, as Americans. I'm not asking you as a citizen or something else. I'm asking you as a human being to stop and say, it's enough. As human beings, I mean, there's English and there's Brits and the French and the Russians and the Geronimos, and I don't care. It's enough. It's time to stop killing people just because they don't agree with your politics or your religion. It's enough. People of the earth, it's time to say, I don't care what you believe in, but I believe that you, Bob Kincaid, have the right to live free, and you have the right to live as best you can. I can't make you happy, and I can't make you, what is that, rich or famous, but I can tell you this, I do understand way I do, but not with some Yankee Doodle Dandy dropping some device that blows my house apart like they have done in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I am tired of fools that follow that kind of logic, Bob. I'm tired of fools that follow the logic that they think that because they believe in some mythical or some invisible sky being that they can dictate to all other beings on this planet how to live. And I do not agree with this, which we have been has been pushed at us by a bunch of fools. And it's time that we stop being fooled. Period. It's time that we ask ourselves, am I going to be the same idiot fool that I was yesterday? And Bob, I refuse to be fooled any longer. So, I don't care who you vote for, but do not vote for John McCain, because he's the biggest fool of the bunch. He thinks that the corporations, or the corporate American, what do you call that, neo-socracy, or whatever, is a child. Did I lose something?
No, I don't think so.
I am saying, do not be a good Nazi. Be what you really, truly are. Human beings floating around on a little speck of dust somewhere in space called Earth. And be yourself. Don't let someone else tell you how to think. And I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me, but be yourself. Don't let someone lead you around by the nose.
Yeah, I know. I had a lot of nose. I witnessed a lot of nose leading this past weekend, and it was not a pleasant thing.
Yeah, I watched it too. Old Hillary kicked out.
I was talking more about the little corporate people that I saw led about by their nose and made to wear matching clothes and all and show up and try to play scare the priest and stuff.
Well, I used to wear women neckties and suits too, and I used to play in the halls of whatever. But the thing is, people, be yourself and don't let someone tell you how to think. Please. I mean, I love you people of this earth, all of you. I mean, I love you. It's because you stand and you speak the truth to power, but the power doesn't listen because they think they are the power. But you, all of you, each and every individual human being on this planet, have your own power. Please use it wisely. And think outside that box. Don't let them take you out. And with that, I will say, Bob Kincaid, you are my hero.
Bless your heart, Bob. Bless your heart. And give our best to Glenda, and you take care, all right?
Well, I'll do the best I can to stay alive.
All right.
And I'll see you on the other side if there is one.
All right. Take care, Bob.
Okay, good.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good friend Bob calling from North Dakota. That's pretty much it. We got a little bit of a late start because, you know, I was an idiot with the internet wire. I'm sorry if I got any of you worked up about all that stuff earlier. I can only tell you it was a mistake that was made honestly and made from a very, very sincere place. And we'll, you know, we'll try again next time. Like, what's that wonderful John Lennon quote at the end of Billy Shear's Night Sounds? We hope we pass the audition and we'll get it right next time. Sometimes I have to do that, too. Coming up, a rerun of Strictly Confidential. After that, the horn section and All Foxed Up coming your way at midnight Eastern time. Many thanks to John Fox and Peter Godbold, our chief engineer and IT professional, respectively. And many thanks to the fine folks at CityNet, whose services bring you all of this programming. Thanks to the dedicated, and I mean it when I say it, courageous people at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Maybe you've got a little better idea now what we're up against here. Go to crmw.net, become a member. It's cheap and easy. Thanks to everybody who has made the first week of this month take off to a roaring start. We sincerely appreciate it, and it's kind of nice to be able to breathe easy for a week. It would be awfully nice, as I said, to be able to shut up about fundraising before we're half done or two-thirds done with the month. Thanks to the moderators, to the news ninjas, to the bloggers. Thanks to you who share your time with us. I hope it means as much to you as it certainly does to everyone here at the Horn. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.